you kind of have to see the narcissist as a child, because in some ways they're very childlike, because they're persistent, they're dysregulated in their emotions. So it's like your three-year-old who comes into your bedroom and cries, and mommy, I want to sleep with you. And if you let them sleep with you, then you're going to do this every night.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the minute you start setting a boundary with a three-year-old and say, no, you're going to go back into your own bed tonight, and you get up from your bed and you usher them back into their bedroom. 5 minutes later, they're back in your bedroom crying again. And then you have to get up and you have to usher them back in your bedroom. And then 10 minutes later, they're crying again. And you have to get up and usher them back into their bedroom. Yes. And what I've told parents of three-year-olds is you may lose two nights of sleep, but on the third night, that child will be so tired, he will sleep all night.
Right.
And so will you.
Uh-huh.
So it's that's how you train a child. Well, it's kind of the same thing with a narcissistic adult. Hey, this is Diane Dirks.
And I'm Rick Voiles.
We've been working with co-parents in conflict for more than two decades. We've taught classes, written books, counseled parents, empathized, and agonized a few times to help people make sense of their complicated families.
We were talking one day, and it occurred to us that helping the most difficult cases comes down to one simple concept. Is one parent willing to let go of the tug-of-war rope, or is it worth it to hold on and fight?
So we invite you to take this journey with us each episode as we tackle the questions, should you hold on or let it go?
Welcome to Co-Parent Dilemmas, where we give you practical solutions to those impossible co-parents. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning.
How are you?
My patience is being tried.
Oh, dear.
So we had a new roof put on last week.
Yes.
Which is great because it looks great. It's been a long time. But we had sunny weather all week until night before last. We had like a torrential downpour.
Uh-huh.
And I woke up yesterday morning to a flooded kitchen.
Ooh.
And of course, we called the roofer back. And
uh-huh.
Owner of the company doesn't know what happened. Foreman doesn't know what happened because neither of them are really supervising anything.
No.
And so it was just frustrating. So yeah, that's been my week of trying to keep things dry. And then the restoration company came. Of course, the roofer is paying for.
Yes.
And you know, they've got all this equipment in my kitchen and just, you know. So I'm not very patient with stuff like that.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh my gosh.
How about you?
Soccer season. So now two grandkids here, and both in soccer. Yeah. And so we'll be spending, I'll get to spend many weekends in the sun outdoors.
Yep. Well, use your sunscreen.
Yeah, I'm gonna wear my hat.
Yeah.
Yes.
So today, Rick, we're going to revisit another subject that we've talked about before on the podcast, but is worth mentioning and talking about again,
mm-hmm.
especially for our new listeners, but also to refresh the memories of our regular listeners, how important it is to structure communication when you have a difficult co-parent.
Right.
Possible co-parent.
Yes.
So this email is from Colleen. She said, I divorced my narcissistic husband 4 years ago, and he clearly still hates me for it. He won't communicate at all regarding the children. So the judge ordered a court app. I think she means like Our Family Wizard or one of those apps that you communicate through. Now he's using the app to emotionally, mentally, and financially abuse me. The court won't hold him accountable. Do I just go zero communication for the next 7 years? Ugh. That means things have to go through the kids, and the kids hate that.
Oh my. Yes, they would hate that.
Yeah. I don't know what she means by the court won't hold him accountable. I mean, they could, but maybe it's not worth going to court for.
Well, often what I hear people say when they say comments like that is, I want the court to stop him. I want somebody to stop him. and the court has power. I can't, so the court should, and the court obviously doesn't have that power, and the court won't.
It sounds like they've already been to court, and the judge has heard the issues and said, you guys need to use this app so that it's, you know, more structured. But it's really not. Here's my problem with these apps is you just transfer from the 14 emails a day you're getting on Gmail to the 14 emails you're getting today on Our Family Wizard, or whatever app you're using.
Yes.
It does have, you know, tone meter and, you know, helps and resources for you to manage your communication a little bit better. And it does have a calendar and ways to pay through the app, you know, reimbursements for medical. It has ways to upload important documents so that everything is all in one place. But it doesn't say, okay, you can only email once a week.
No.
Which is why we have taught for years the email, structured email protocol that causes you each to have a little self-control.
Yeah.
And if the impossible parent can't control him or herself, at least you can control what you do. And so I'm going to say it again, like I have 1,000 times before, Colleen, adopt the email protocol and inform him that you are only going to email him once a week through the app.
Yes.
And address the issues there. And you will not entertain communication through texts or any other form of communication. Now, unless the court order says something about when you have to respond or something
right.
like that. But if the court order doesn't address those issues, then you can just say, I'm going to do this once a week. And he's going to not like it. But the court order doesn't force you to do any more than that. The court has told her where to communicate.
Yes.
But she can say, this is when I'm going to communicate, whether you do or not. And Colleen, we highly recommend that you send him the link. And I'll put the link in the show notes to our email protocol, that you send him a link, the link to that, to say, this is how I'm doing it. I would invite you to do it the same way, but he's not obligated, so he probably won't, because
don't expect him to
control you that way.
No.
So yeah.
So it also, I wonder if even if the court order, I wonder if you could do this. Even if the court order said you must respond within 24 hours, if your response could be, I will be glad to discuss this in detail in my weekly protocol. Yeah. I wonder if she'd get in trouble if she did that within 24 hours.
I doubt it. As long as she is sticking to that, and as long as the issue is not
an emergency. Yeah.
Yeah. Or something that has to be answered the next day or whatever.
Right.
As long as you're accomplishing something for the kids, I can't imagine the court would split hairs on that.
Yep.
And she says, do I just go zero communication? Rick, what's the problem with going zero? There are a couple of problems there.
Right. And I would say, given the context of this, the most obvious one that jumps out first is the court has already slapped his hand for him not communicating. Mm-hmm. The judges often do not like zero communication.
Yeah. Because they know then the person ending up doing the communication will be the child.
Right. And a bunch of things will fall through the cracks for the kids.
Probably twice in my career, I have seen court orders that told the parents, do not talk to each other.
Ever.
Because it was so abusive to the children for the parents to even look at one another that the court decided the lesser of two evils was for them to not talk at all.
Yes.
That is very rare. And it's sad. For the kids, you know, when that happens, because if you need the help of the other parent to pick up Johnny at school, you're not allowed to call him. So Johnny has to just sit there and wait and figure it out on his own, because you can't communicate. So it's really a bad idea. However, zero communication with a narcissist usually equals amped up mood.
What do you mean amped up?
When a narcissist tries to trigger you and it succeeds and you get triggered, they love that. That's like handing them a $50 bill.
Right? Cha-ching.
Yeah. It's the dopamine goes nuts in their brain. Ah, I got her. But when you go silent, that tends to amp it up and they'll do the next crazy thing. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you don't want to be triggered, but you also don't want to go silent. One creates a lot of dopamine for them. The other one creates a lot of angry energy, which causes them to go to the next crazy thing that they're going to do to try to get you triggered. You know what I'm saying?
And the easiest target would be the kids, because he can't communicate or she can't communicate with you.
Well, no, I'm just saying that, okay, they send you a text and say something really snarky to try to trigger you. If you don't say anything at all, they're going to send three more texts to try to trigger you.
Or
three more crazier texts, or really amp up the criticism or whatever it is that they're doing to try to trigger you. So not responding at all tends to make them worse, is what I'm trying to say.
I see.
That makes sense.
Yep.
If they don't get what they want out of you through that means. So, and then it's a twisted blame. Mm-hmm. Can't believe you won't communicate with me. You're a horrible person, blah, blah, blah. You know, it just escalates.
Right.
But if you write back and say, I will talk to you about this on Sunday night. Mm-hmm. There's something in their brain that says, what do I say to that? Because they know the court is going to read this later.
Right.
They don't seem to care that the court reads all of their criticisms, because in a narcissist's brain, they really believe the judge is going to see it their way.
Right.
They're going to see that she's a terrible parent because she won't communicate with me. They're going to see that all my nasty words are justified.
Uh-huh.
But when the other parent stays calm and says, thank you for your message, I'll get back to you on Sunday night on a regular appointed time that I'm going to communicate with you, that baffles the narcissist a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Not completely, because everyone's different, right?
Yeah.
It kind of makes them say, okay, what do I say to that? Because if that plays out in court, she's looking nice. Now, do I have to be nice? So chances are they'll go silent.
Mm-hmm.
And then say, I didn't get it. They didn't get that text. And then they'll write you in tomorrow and say, you never answered my question.
Uh-huh.
And then you say again, yes, I did. I will communicate with you on Sunday night at our regularly appointed time to share information.
Yep.
You see what I'm saying? Am I making sense?
Yeah, okay. It becomes a strategy, and the consistency is part of the protection.
Yeah. I think you kind of have to see the narcissist as a child, because in some ways they're very childlike, because they're persistent, they're dysregulated in their emotions. So it's like your 3-year-old who comes into your bedroom and cries, and mommy, I want to sleep with you. And if you let them sleep with you, then you're going to do this every night.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and occasionally it's okay to let your 3-year-old sleep with you. But if it becomes this habit, then it becomes their only way they can sleep, right? But the minute you start setting a boundary with a 3-year-old and say, no, you're going to go back into your own bed tonight, and you get up from your bed and you usher them back into their bedroom, 5 minutes later, they're back in your bedroom crying again. And then you have to get up and you have to usher them back in your bedroom. And then 10 minutes later, they're crying again. And you have to get up and usher them back into their bedroom. Yes. And what I've told parents of 3-year-olds is you may lose 2 nights of sleep. But on the 3rd night, that child will be so tired, he will sleep all night.
Right.
And so will you.
Uh-huh.
And then he realizes, oh, I can sleep. And now mommy isn't going to believe that there's a monster in the right bed, because you know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
So it's that's how you train a child. Well, it's kind of the same thing with a narcissistic adult. They're very childlike. They're like the crying toddler who keeps saying, bah, 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 bah. And you just have to stay consistent. And in the beginning, it's going to be a pain in the rear.
Yes.
To continue to do this, but you can't be thinking in your mind, oh my gosh, I can't lose 10 nights of sleep with my 3-year-old. You can't think that way.
No.
That's not how it's going to work.
That's what it feels, right?
That's what it feels like.
Yep.
So you might throw your hands in the air after two times and just say, okay, I'll answer your crazy text. But I just want you to know, think of the three-year-old. Got to invest two sleepless nights so that on night three, the two-year-old will fall asleep and we won't have to do this. And then night four, we repeat. And, you know, there might be a little backsliding on night five and six, and you have to kind of lose a little sleep there. But I've done this with parents of young children for years. And I guarantee you, if you go through a week or two of this, you have that nipped in the bud.
Well, that one issue, because they're three that for a issue. Whole year. Yeah,
exactly. But typically, if you are consistent and confident with a three-year-old about anything,
yes,
they will eventually follow suit because, you know, they need that stability. If you allow them, if you allow the tail to wag the dog or the three-year-old to control the parent, it's exhausting.
Yes, it is.
So in this respect, when you're dealing with a narcissistic co-parent, you really have to set your structure, stick with it no matter what they do, and they will go over the top for the first two nights.
Yes.
They will go over the top to try to trigger you and get what they want and be persistent on their end. And you just have to be like a pillar of concrete.
Yes.
Unmovable, unshakable. And you can do it. And chances are they'll realize the $50 bill ain't coming.
Uh-huh. No dopamine tonight.
Right. That doesn't mean they're not going to do something else to make you try to make you crazy, but at least you'll have this communication thing in control, under control. And when it does go back to court, you're going to look like the sane parent.
Yes.
Hey, listeners, we've got some exciting news. Starting March 6th, I'll be hosting Hump Day Help every Wednesday at noon Eastern Standard Time via Zoom. Each Wednesday will be focused on a specific topic. The first Wednesdays of the month will focus on parental alienation. The second Wednesdays will focus on parents dealing with false allegations. The third Wednesdays will be about surviving a narcissistic co-parent. And fourth Wednesdays, confronting post-separation control and abuse. You can come to one or all. The only requirement is that you become a Patreon non-impossible VIP. The cost is only $10 a month, but I guarantee you'll get your money's worth out of these support groups. We'll run them through the end of May, and if attendance is constant, we'll continue through the summer. So get started today with Patreon. The link is in the show notes. So find an accountability partner, whether it's a friend or a relative or your therapist or somebody who can coach you through those two sleepless nights. And I'm using that obviously as a metaphor, right?
Right. Yep.
And while you're like screaming and yelling and crying and, you know, because you're tired and you just want to give in because it's just easier to give in, have your person there saying, keep going. Have them listen to this episode first.
Yes.
You know what? So they know how important it is to stay consistent and stay resolute. And then Colleen, you try that. And then I want you to email me in a month and tell me how things are going. It won't take a month, but I want you to have it. It'll take a week or two, and then you have 2 weeks of respite. Then I want you to write me and tell me how great you feel.
Cool.
So what do you think, Rick?
Well, okay, let's go one step. Let's take it to the next step, because we're responding to the immediate text, the frequency that they have over and over and over again, because they feel they have open access to you. And we're writing back, I'll be glad to discuss that in my Sunday protocol email. Mm-hmm. Then what do I say to all of this accusation? We have a bunch of other mantras like to respond to not get triggered or engaged by the accusations. And one that comes to mind is, well, it's clear that we don't agree on this, this point, or we don't look at this situation the same way, I hope we can focus on the children going forward. Some kind of mantra like that, no matter how often they keep bringing up the past and they keep accusing you of something.
I will also put that in the show notes. We have a list of what, 20?
Yes.
20 responses to narcissists to kind of keep you sane. So I'll put that in the show notes. Also, we have a video in our Patreon account, and you can go purchase that video of how to use the email protocol. We did a workshop on that, and you can purchase that workshop video to take you through it step by step, why it's important, how to use it, what the benefits are, all of that, not only to you, but to your kids. The benefit to your children is exponential, because it's not only keeping the conflict at bay, but the kids are going to get a better you.
Definitely.
Because you're not all up in your head every day of the week about this other parent. And trust me, kids are watching. They're hypersensitive right now, especially if you're newly divorced or they're worried about the conflict between mom and dad. Every time your phone rings and you answer it, they have one ear toward you. They could be watching TV or playing a video game or doing something, and that your phone rings and you pick it up and say hello, and they have one ear toward you to wonder, is that mom or dad?
Yeah.
And when they realize it's your friend, they have a sigh of relief and they go back to what they're doing. Or they're watching your face when a text comes through. And if your face is all scrunched up in this tense, you know, way, right away they're thinking, ugh, that's the other parent.
Yeah.
And they're paying attention. Why do you think they pay attention so much to that, Rick?
Well, it depends on their age. But also I think their first assumption typically, oh, is they're fighting about me or I'm the cause of this.
Right. Yeah. Right. They desperately want to feel like they don't have to do something or be something else to keep you from fighting.
Right.
They're not a parent. They don't understand what it feels like to be a parent. So they see this from a completely different perspective. What are they going to fight about now, and how can I fix it? Or what did I do wrong? Or what should I have done differently so my parents are not once again fighting about me?
Yeah.
It's a horrible way to live for a child, to be on edge all of the time, wondering, okay, what's the next shoe that's going to drop? Mm-hmm. It's going to make me feel like crap. I really want parents to understand that. So I know it's can be hard to do this, but if at all possible, don't ever communicate with the other parent when your kids are present. Mm-hmm. Look at the text, put the phone down. Don't decide, oh, I think I'll email him now at 9 a.m. on Saturday while my kids are sitting right next to me watching cartoons.
No.
Don't do that, because it's likely going to trigger you, and they're going to say in their minds, every time my mom talks to my dad, she becomes a different person. And I don't like her the next hour after that. Or every time dad talks to mom or texts with mom, he becomes distant. He's not paying attention to me anymore. Or I see him get sad, or I see mom get angry. They don't like that. They want you. They want the parent who's there for them, not the one who's mad that they had children. And I know you're not mad you had children, but that's how they feel.
Well, and they don't want to feel as though, why do I have to suffer because you two couldn't figure out who you couldn't get along, or you whatever, because you two divorced.
That's the teenager mindset.
Right. Exactly. One of my hat pals.
Yeah. Up to about 12. This is all my fault. After 12, this is all your fault.
Your fault. Yeah. And you're making my life miserable. And, why don't you guys?
And if I'm a moody teenager, it's because of you.
Because of the divorce, right? Yeah. So this last sentence, and this is where it gets a little bit complicated. That means things have to go through the kids. I disagree. And for some of the same reasons we've just talked about, never make things go through the kids. And so I'm sitting here thinking, she said the next 7 years. So she's got maybe the youngest is 11. Mm-hmm. And so what do you have to talk about with the other parent? And I can hear somebody telling me, well, we've got the soccer schedule and, you know, he often forgets and doesn't pick them up. And I need to remind him of the dentist appointment. And I would encourage you to not do those things and organize your life in such a way that you never, ever need any information from that narcissistic ex at all about anything.
Yeah. There could be, and I'm glad you said that, Rick, because that brought to mind that there could be other issues going on here that Colleen is not expressing, such as he may be wanting to change the schedule a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And she may be trying to accommodate that just to keep him at bay. You know, for instance, oh, well, I can't pick him up on Friday. I'm going to pick him up Saturday morning instead. I mean, narcissistic co-parents just kind of tell you what they're going to do.
Yes.
And then if she's not talking to him, he's going to tell the daughter or the 11-year-old, and the 11-year-old then has to tell mom. Mm-hmm. Something tells me that's what she's talking about. If I gotcha. Go zero communication, he will do his crazy things anyway. He won't stick to the plan. And then he'll use the kids to inform me about what he's doing, which is a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to continue to communicate with him so that he says, I'll be picking the kids up on Saturday morning. And you say, okay, what are you going to do? If you are the primary parent, if you've got primary custody of your children, the other parent can just not take their time. They're allowed.
Right.
They're allowed to inconvenience you. That's one of the reasons why most judges, even in 50-50 scenarios, mm-hmm. want one parent named as the primary custodian for yes. that very reason. So that you can't both just decide, I don't want the kid. And then the kid, there has to be a default parent. When one parent gets mad and disappears, the other parent is the default parent.
Yeah, right.
So she might not like it, but if dad is in the habit of changing the schedule or saying, I'm going to be late or I'm not doing the Wednesday night, this you kind of have to say, okay, and arrange your schedule accordingly so that the parent is not communicating that through the child. That would be a really bad idea.
And this is where it dovetails nicely our plan B trainings, yeah, that yes. you always have to have a plan B ready at all times, that it dovetails with the email protocol that we have right. to manage yeah. impossible co-parents.
Right. And if you're not familiar with the plan B, that's just something that you can do that doesn't require the other parent's permission that gets the child what he or she needs.
Yeah.
In this case, plan B would be what the child needs is to not have to be the communicator. So you become the communicator, but when he pulls whatever he's going to pull, you just work around it.
Yep.
Okay. And you say, great.
Mm-hmm. All right.
He doesn't want you to say great. He wants you to get frustrated and lash out so he can lash out back, you know, all the things.
Yep.
All the things.
So yeah, you were supposed to go with your dad today, but looks like you're going to the nail salon with me.
Yes. Or if you have plans, then you always have backup.
Right.
You know, yep. childcare, or, you know, you have all of those things proactively ready
mm-hmm.
because you know who you're dealing with.
That's right.
If you don't, all you're going to do is be triggered and frustrated all the time.
Yes. Like we used to say in class all the time, stop being surprised that your ex won't do the right thing.
Right. You can't get in divorce what you didn't get in marriage.
Right.
So you divorced your narcissistic husband 4 years ago because of who he was, presumably.
Mm-hmm.
That's how this email reads, right?
Yep. And
he's mad about it. Well, divorce didn't change him.
No.
But it can change you.
Yes. And,
you know, like we always say, you asserted the most important boundary, which is, I'm not going to live this way anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And started your new life. There's no other boundary you can set that will control him or his behavior. You set a boundary to say, I'm not going to live this way. So then don't continue to live that way.
Yes.
You know.
Yep. You divorced in order for you to be healthy and free. Be free, which makes you able to be the best possible parent you could be for your kids. Well, do that. Keep finding ways to continue that healthy journey away from him for your kids. Right.
Yep. Because when you have children and you divorce, it doesn't automatically make you free.
No.
And people literally can live in two different houses and still feel like they're in a toxic relationship.
Yep.
If you don't change how you interact with this person, it's going to be really expensive to get a divorce and pay rent in two different houses and still have the same life.
Yes.
So painful. Don't sign up for that. Don't sign up for that. If you want to be free and live in two different houses, then set yourself free. And one of the ways to do that is you set boundaries so that I know what my responsibility is every week to communicate as a co-parent. I'm not going to allow him to determine how I communicate. He or she may, you know, throw monkey wrenches into the scheduling all the time just because they can. And you just go with the flow around that.
So
you get maybe get more time with your kids. I know one thing, take more time than he's allotted.
Right.
So, you know, see it as a bonus. Great. You get to be with me tonight.
Yes, indeed.
Going on a date or whatever.
So think of it as training a three-year-old, only this narcissistic parent is developmentally delayed and will probably stay three for the majority of the rest of their lives.
And then when your child turns 18 or maybe even before that, you can walk away from the three-year-old.
Yes.
You know, and then your poor children have to raise the three-year-old.
Deal with them for the rest of their lives. Yes. Yeah, but by then, hopefully they've learned some strategies to create some healthy boundaries and healthy distance. Yeah. Yep.
By watching you.
Exactly.
All right. Thank you, Colleen, for your question. And I want to hear from you in a month. I want you to try this and then let me know how it goes.
Yep.
And if you don't try it, all it tells me is maybe you like this conflict.
Ooh.
All right. Thanks, everybody. And we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know, before the COVID lockdown, I never thought that I would do online therapy with my clients, but I actually found it to be very satisfying for both of us. BetterHelp is customized online therapy just like that, that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. So join the millions of people who are seeing what online therapy is really about. It's always a good time to invest in yourself because you are your greatest asset. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and Co-Parent Dilemma listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/dilemma. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/dilemma, DILEMMA. The information contained in this podcast is generic. It must not be misconstrued as constituting legal or psychological advice. Decisions relevant to any specific individual, family system, or case require the direct evaluation of skilled, child-centered professionals.